be seated. Great words of wisdom from the least likely of our theology today. They are unlikely theologians themselves, and they are Phil and Don Everly, the Everly brothers.
You have
younger
crowd,
Bob. You're uptake here this morning, aren't you? 8 o'clockers got that right away. I don't know if there's a, maybe that's because not a lot of you will fit into this category that I'm going to raise with you. That recording by the Everly Brothers was 1958. Now, there were people who came out the door this morning and said, "Man, I wasn't even born in 1958, you know, and that there are a number of people in that category here, it seems. But most of you, I'm sure, remember those days. It's when the microchip was invented. Pope John the 23rd was named the 262nd pontiff of the Roman Catholic Church, and if you turned on your television, the two shows that you watched the most, in all likelihood, was Candid Camera and the Ed Sullivan Show. That was also the year, some ups and downs in every year, you know, but in that year, it was also the year that Ford rolled out the Edsel. It was also the year that Dwight D. Eisenhower was our president. But we had a lot of problems in those days. But if you look at today, those problems seem to pale into, not insignificance, but into a smaller confinement. Because today, we're worried about things like, North Korea launching missiles. Now they have an ICBM capability, I read. And then there's the war in Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria that, it's going on for at least 10 years that I know of, maybe more, I'm sure it's more than that. Then Israel and Palestine, they're still going at it, and I don't know how long that battle's been going on. Terrorism is now a worldwide threat for all of us. Oh, and our president today is Donald J. Trump. But our worries have reached worldwide proportions, not just some isolated incident somewhere. It is a daily phenomenon. And now more than ever, Jesus' words that we just read are the only hope in our world that is now being consumed by terror and mass murders and fear and destruction. The good news for us is that invitation from Jesus still stands today. Come to me, all of you who are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Some years ago, a theologian, a highly regarded theologian and a scholar, and he was a bishop in the Methodist Church, and he was down at Duke University and taught there, and his name was William Willimon. And back then, he predicted that our age will be known not as the age of freedom, but as the age of anxiety. Holy Moses, did he hit that one right? We are anxious about things, aren't we? Are the threats to our world, though, or seem to be just a backdrop to what's going on inside of us? We worry about money and our health and getting older, and I'm sitting down instead of standing up. I worry about stuff like that. I'm sure the safety of our children. I've said this line to you before, but I'm going to say it again, whether you like it or not. Back when I was a kid, before 1958, me and my pals, we would wander miles away from our homes to play all day. This summer, of course. We wouldn't come back till around 5 o'clock because we knew that was dinner time. That was the only thing that brought us back home. And our parents didn't worry one bit about what might happen to us. And yet, we were out there having adventures that would probably curl their hair if they knew. And in my case, my parents never knew some of the things that I did. But my grandchildren today, they are confined to this one space that's probably as big as this nave here to play in their backyard. And looking over the backyard is this big picture window where my daughter sits, vigilant. I mean, what could happen out there? You know, there's trees further up back, but the toys and the swing and all. And yet she watches them like a mother hen over her little chicks. And if they're not doing that, they're being driven by a parent or other parents to some well-organized, constructed sporting event that's overseen by parents who are watching every move these kids make. They don't get hurt. I don't know, I grieve about my grandchildren deeply. My Kathleen, my daughter, just doesn't have the time to marshal these three little hoodlums. No, these three little children, you know, to get them off to Sunday school or church. It doesn't happen. Which causes anxiety for the grandparents because we're anxious about their souls. At least, well, I know Carol and Esther just as much as I am. And for us, the rest of us adults, our anxiety seems to rise up from the unforeseen. We're worried about what's going to happen, you know, although we don't know what it might be. And we don't have any control over it anyway, like health care. Or my favorite pain in the neck is navigating through traffic jams, which is endemic to where we live. And if any of you have to go on that I-95, go with God. I pray for you constantly. We go down to Midlothian in the morning to see the grandchildren occasionally. And we see them, and it's rather sparse. And I look across the divide and I see this bumper to bumper to bumper. I cringe over that. The anxiety they must be experiencing. So, but waiting seems to be another thing that we have to worry about. It's a pastime now. Enormous amount of time is spent waiting in lines, even to get to the restroom, for Pete's sake. You know, waiting in lines for getting through the security check at an airport. I'll come back to that in a minute. Or buying just a ticket, you know, to a show. Just in line for everything. The bottom line here to all this, though, is I believe, I have this theory, we've lost some degree of freedom in all of this anxiety and all of these things that suck up our energy and our attention. We've lost the freedom to live the life that God has intended for us. That's the heart and soul of the sermon, by the way. It's only when we accept Jesus' invitation does the load begin to lift a little. And we come starting to experience something new. We're really more free than we think we are. Come to me, he says. Take my yoke upon you. Did you catch that? I don't know if you know anything about yokes. I didn't. So somebody told me, Bob, you ever see a yoke? It's not one ox. There are two collars to these things, and they're joined together. You know? And it takes two to plow, to do the work, to pull the load. And it occurs to me, that's probably why Jesus used that analogy of my yoke is light. Take it upon you. The idea that there are two collars to this yoke, Jesus being in one, hauling the most of the weight and alongside of us, helping us along the way in what we're doing in our lives. And of course, Jesus' yoke was also the cross that he bore as a sacrificial act of love for all of us. He laid down his life for our burdens. Not only that, but he also carries out carries on his shoulders in that time of crucifixion and suffering all the sins that we have committed. And to think that all we have to do is receive and receive the offer that he has given to us, extended to us. Not long ago, I ran into this woman. My favorite phrase is, she was some piece of work. We were both in the line, in the security line at Orlando Airport. We had taken the kids to Universal Studios, and they were on another plane, and mercifully. And we were on one plane going back here. And there was this woman. The two of us were in wheelchairs, which is why I'm sitting instead of standing. I can't stand more than 10 minutes, because I'll just fall right down. I don't know what her malady was, but the two of us were in wheelchairs. She was a little bit ahead of me, so I started, you know, something got into me. I rolled up to her, you know, and I deliberately bumped into her wheelchair. Deliberately bumped her. And see, you know, I didn't know what to expect, but I figured this ought to be good. And so sure enough, she turned around with this, "What the heck are you doing? Who are you?" Now, being a compassionate but wise guy at the same time, so I live in a tough world. I leaned over to tell her, "You know, I don't know this woman from Adam. She doesn't know me either. You know what we're doing here, right? The only reason that we're here is you and I are in a race to see who gets through that magnetometer first. And I'm here to tell you, I'm going to win the race." And she looks at me, and without missing a beat, this is an elderly woman. You know, she didn't... without missing a beat, she says, "Well, we'll just have to see about that, won't we?" And somebody standing behind us said, "You go, girl." You know. It's fascinating. You know, that could have gone any number of directions, you know, that conversation, but she got it. While we were waiting, though, I learned a little bit about her. Her name is Martha. It seemed that her husband died a year ago. And again, knowing no shame, I asked her, "Well, Martha, how old are you?" And she says, I'm 74. And I graciously, very graciously, I said, "Well, I've got 2 years on you, Martha, and I'm still going to beat you through that magnetometer." Got a little laugh out of her. More than I got just now. But I took my chance to ask her about her bereavement, it being the subject of my doctoral thesis, which is making me an older man than I already am. "How's it going for you? How's it been for you, Martha, this past year?" She said, "I'm doing fine. Harry and I, we had a wonderful life together. More than 30 years. Just over 30 years we were married." She says, we lived up there in the north where you'd come from. I think it was New Jersey, God's country. And we decided to come down here to Florida." That's for you, just so you know that you wanted me to plug it in there. "And we decided to move down here to Florida to start a church. At first we had 6 people in our living room." She says, "You know what we got today? We have this beautiful church. We have 300 people coming faithfully every single Sunday to worship. And I also had friends and family to get me through my hard times. They were there to remind me that Jesus was walking with me throughout this time of bereavement. And he still is," she said. And then I asked her about her pastor. I want to know about that. And she explained how he came to the hospital every single day. And after her husband died, she says, "The pastor would visit me in my home just about every week. And he'd listen to my memories, which I shared with him. And for the next 3 weeks after that, he would call me on the telephone just about 20 minutes to half an hour before I went to bed every single night," he said, "just to check in." Her remembrances about those times put me in mind of that yoke that Jesus was talking about. It occurred to me that that pastor had helped her big time to carry that yoke of bereavement. I sensed there was this gentleness about Martha. Not the gentleness that you normally associate with people our age. Well, most people our age. But rather a gentleness that was born from a newfound freedom in her love for Jesus. She found freedom. Man, I said to myself, I want to grow up to be just like you, Martha. She had accepted Jesus' invitation. And she was born into a new life. A life of freedom. Freedom from all those worries. It's the life that God intended for her and for us. By the way, she won the race. I think she cheated because they knew that I could at least stand up. So while I was walking through the magnetometer and, you know, this business here, she was rolling right on along. Looked past me, you know, and fortunately she was very grand about it. Jesus' invitation for us to lay aside all of our worries, as hard a task as that might be, it's still open for the rest of us. And all we got to do is just listen. Just listen for it. And accept it. And then Jesus is going to carry us the rest of the way. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.